Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
We are feeling five alive here on the Leeds United Fan Show. Five wins on the bounce in the Championship for Leeds United. Their best record since around this time last year when they went seven wins on the bounce. If you were listening about 2 minutes or so ago, I did then refer to the fact that the wheels may well have come off at Elland Road. We're hoping, of course, that does not happen again. On this, the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from All Stats, aren't we? John McKenzie and Marcus Stanway. How are we, chaps?
I'm wonderful.
Yes?
Yes.
Marcus?
I'm well. Me and John have just polished off a lot of
I'm well. Me and John have just polished off a lot of chocolate.
Yeah. Sorry.
Have you? Well, where is it?
You said you didn't want any.
So. We did eat it all.
You said
brilliant.
Strength in numbers or something, I believe was the phrase that you used. I didn't quite understand what that meant, but you told me you didn't want any of our cornflake clusters.
Yes, it was a Beatleism. I won't lie to you. Just a quick update on a game going on in the Championship as we speak. Millwall have taken the lead against Nottingham Forest. Sean Williams with, quite incredibly, his fourth goal in his last fifth games against Nottingham Forest. So he likes playing against them, it would seem. But Millwall leading Nottingham Forest at the moment on a good run under new boss Gary Rowett. Just the one defeat since he took over. So things are looking relatively rosy at the Den. Interestingly, Forest have dropped both Lewis Grabban and Joe Lolly to the bench today. 11 goals between them in the Championship so far this season. So Sabrina Mucci making some interesting choices.
They're a local team, aren't they?
They are, just down the road. Yeah, not too far from me, to be fair. About a 10-minute train ride.
There we go.
Anyway, this is the Leeds United Fan Show, of course. And as always, we are going to start with an opening stat. John?
Yeah, I've got... You were quite scared when I showed
well,
you.
Yeah, it's running. Quite threatening, quite imposing.
What I've given Matt is a table with the open play box shots from November. So this is just the last month. These are the amount of shots in open play that Leeds gave up in their own box and created in the opposition box. So as you can see, Leeds are top of the table. They've created 45 shots in the opposition's box in open play, and they've conceded just 7 shots in open play from the opposition. Now, to put this in perspective, the next closest team in terms of goals shots conceded is West Brom. They're up at 11, so they're up there, but they've only created 25. So we've created 20 shots more in the box than West Brom and allowed 4 fewer. So everything's looking rosy. There's some interesting reading in the table. For example, Fulham, who everyone's a bit worried about at the moment, created fewer shots in the opposition box than they allowed in their own box as well. So this is a fairly good stat for indicating how well a team is producing and preventing their opposition as well. So everything's looking good at Elland Road.
Okay, so I'm just looking at this again, just analysing what you've given me. So I just want to clarify a few things. So, so you've had 45 shots in the opposition box this season?
No, this isn't just in November.
Oh, this is just in November. Mm. Right, okay. And in terms of shots in your own box that you've had against you is 7.
Yeah.
And the ratio?
The ratio is just the relationship between the 45 and the 7. So if you're above, if you're above 50%, you've created more than you've conceded. So anyone who's below it, so Fulham, as you can see, are at 43. So that means that they've actually conceded more chances in the box than they have created.
What do you make of that, Marcus?
It's a very nicely formatted table, that's what I would say.
Is it colour-coded? It's a shame that we've got it black and white.
Conditional formatting in there, it's beautiful.
Okay, well, look, plenty coming up in the next hour or so, of course, reflecting on that win, that emphatic victory over Middlesbrough, of course, looking ahead to games against Huddersfield and Hull, of course, next week in the middle of the week. And as always, your listener questions will be answered at the end of the show. But just going back to last week's show, we, of course, had a Middlesbrough guest on the line. He was very confident, wasn't he, that Middlesbrough would get a result at Elland Road. 3 minutes in, Bamford, bosh.
Yeah, I did drop you a text message as soon as that happened. yeah, it was... It's a funny game. I think a lot of people at Leeds were like, you know, we all said that... There was a lot of Leeds fans who were like, you know, yeah, we said we were going to beat Middlesbrough and, you know, we were due a big result. And that's kind of true, but I was talking today, we recorded our podcast. We do like a monthly review on our podcast channel. I was talking to Jamie Kemp, who's one of the editors at Opta. And he was saying... Actually, if you look at the XG, the underlying stats, the XG, we overperformed our XG quite considerably. I think we created about 1.6 and we scored 4. And he was saying, you know, in some games you get Matthias Klik picking up the ball, scoring an absolute worldie from outside the box, and then that makes all the difference. Suddenly you're miles ahead, and you've just got to kind of hope that those moments come along where you score the low percentage shot, and then suddenly your task becomes a lot easier. So yeah, I think, you know, we were always going to win that game. Scoring right at the beginning helps. Teams sit deep against us in the hope that they can hold out as long as possible. So in that game, it lasted 3 minutes, and suddenly the opposition know they have to come out and try and get something, and suddenly the game opens out, and we've talked about space a lot on this show, and Leeds were suddenly in a lot more space. So I think it's a combination of factors, really, that meant that game was the one that was 4-0.
Interesting on Klik, by the way. I was reading some stats about him. You may well have seen these already, guys, but he's created the most chances from open play in the Championship this season. That's 40 chances he's created. He's been involved in the most open play sequences, ending in a shot. I know you like these. That's 117. Only
one. These are good stats.
They're great stats.
Yeah, these are great. Yeah, you've been doing it. Yeah.
There you go, mate. Yeah.
I think he was top for final third passes as well.
Yeah,
over 300.
But he's making more passes in the final third than any other player in the Championship as well.
Yeah, the staggering statistic within all of that, just one assist this season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way that Leeds play is we're often trying to get the ball to Jack Harrison, particularly. Now we've got Helder Costa playing as well, so he's trying to hit the byline too. But what you're getting with Klik is, rather than playing incisive passes through to Bamford, a lot of the time what you're seeing is getting that ball into the channels and so that they can hit the byline and pull the ball back across. So I think the fact that he's maybe not got as many assists doesn't surprise me, because the game plan isn't about him getting assists, it's about getting the ball to other players who will get assists.
Yeah, definitely. You see him quite a lot in games, waiting for the return ball to come to him. I think he's looked quite a frustrated figure in the box in a lot of games where he's given a really creative pass down the side and he's expecting it back in, and then he's waving his arm in the air saying, "I'm open." I think at Middlesbrough, I mean, no discredit to Middlesbrough, but they did look very poor in that game. They were standing off defenders. Our ability to get shots in was just silly, basically. Mm-hmm. And he obviously capitalised on that with that, beautiful.
Yeah, he got that shot from outside the box. But the other two, the other goal that he got and the goal that Costa got were the defenders sitting so deep that they had the chance to get the shot in and it just deflected in off a defender because they weren't closing down, but they were also sort of crowding the box too much and not really giving the goalkeeper a chance to even make a save. So
he's got that in his locker as well, isn't he? That whippage. Yeah. I seem to recall a goal he scored against Salford earlier in the season. Not so much a proper whip, but he did cut inside. Great goal, that.
He did the same against Wednesday last season, didn't he? That was our goal of the season last season. It was a proper top corner whip from outside the box.
Mm. Yeah, I think Sheffield Wednesday also had their goal of the season in that game. It was Adam Reach with this enormous volley, and then Kitch just goes, "Oh, I've got one up on that."
Elsewhere in the game, guys, Jonathan Woodgate, of course, returning. The reception for him, I mean, I know he spoke about it after the game, said it was great.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We were just talking about Jonathan Woodgate before we came on because Marcus was saying he didn't realise that this was his first managerial appointment, and we looked at his win percentage. His win percentage of 15%, which is not pleasant, is it? But what do you do? Like Middlesbrough feels like they're at a bit of a juncture at the moment, and he's sort of the fall guy. I think he's sort of what people kind of expected Frank Lampard to be, weirdly. You know, you sort of think, well, we'll give it to a club favourite for a bit just while we're making that transition and see what happens. But I feel like the club's in a horrible situation for him to be expected to drag them out of it. So it's just one of those things where you just sort of hope it doesn't end too badly. But they seem to be supporting him and giving him the chance. But I think that's probably because they realise they've got players they need to move on. They need to sort of overhaul the squad. They need to sort of get the club from out of that, I guess, Premier League-induced malaise they've been in, and get them on an upward trajectory.
Yeah, injury hit as well at the moment, Middlesbrough. So a difficult job that is going to be for him. Perhaps waiting to January to see what they can do. Reinforcements just with regards to Leeds. I referenced it at the top of the show, Marcus. That's 5 wins on the bounce now, 8 unbeaten since that defeat to Millwall. It's looking good, isn't it?
It's looking good. It's always reassuring when you go on BBC Sport and you see win, 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 win. No black marks in the record. So it's good. It's got the kind of the feel of last year where there was that pre-Christmas momentum. Was it 7 last year? 7 wins?
It was 7, yeah. And it wasn't until the 29th of December, just shortly before the new year, that whole defeat came in.
And we did mention, though, last week, I think, that run of form did come with some sort of pretty meaty comebacks, whereas the last 5 games have pretty much all felt a bit run-of-the-mill. Obviously, there's the Luton game and the Reading game where we relied on late goals, but you would still say that we were probably worth a win in both of them. So it's quite nice. We've said it, I think, a few times in the last few shows, just it's nice to have to just ease your way through a game, feel as though you're in control and everything sort of goes the way it's meant to be planned, which hasn't been the case in other months. Certainly wasn't the case last month. So I have a quite optimism about it, which is, you know, you sort of go about your business, you win the games you should win, and we've got a really tough December coming up, but yeah, we'll probably drop points in some of those games, but it feels as though we've done enough this month to sort of justify losing maybe big games in a busy Christmas period.
Yeah, and you look at that sequence as well. Last season, that 7, the 6th and 7th were games against, like you mentioned, the Villa game, the Blackburn game, taxing games in a period when you've got so many fixtures. And we're going to look ahead to those later on the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie, of course, from All Stats, aren't we? And Marcus Stanway as well. We are looking ahead to the fixtures coming up, of course, Huddersfield at the weekend and then Hull in midweek. Now, ordinarily, you'd think 8 games away is a long way away, but it's not, because 8 games away is Monday, the 6th of January, when Leeds travel to the Emirates in probably the juiciest. I'm scrapping the Merseyside derby. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about the Merseyside. We've seen Liverpool annihilate. Yeah, we've seen them annihilate Everton earlier this week. This is the game everybody can't wait for. Arsenal hosting Leeds in the 3rd round of the FA Cup. Marcus, lovely stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting, this one. I can't remember the last Arsenal-Leeds game. It was many years ago, wasn't it? It was in the FA Cup. It's interesting, obviously, with this factor, Eddie Nketiah. I understand he's not allowed to play for Arsenal for Leeds in this game, which is interesting.
If he's still at the club, right? It's a possibility that he might not even be at the club.
Well, yeah, that would be quite a quick turnaround, I reckon, in 3 days to get him back to Arsenal and then back in the lineup for against Leeds. But let's not think about that. Let's just hope Patrick Bamford can fill in his place. But yeah, an interesting fixture. I've been to the Emirates a couple of times, and the atmosphere there, is it good? I don't know.
Is it a library? I believe.
Yeah,
it's just, no. It's not. It's a modern stadium.
It's a big void.
Oh,
Me and my friends have a word that we use of Arsenal, which is the Highbury ripple, we call it, which is when a player passes the ball across the field and everyone just politely applauds.
Right.
And you hear the ripple just going across. That's about as exciting as it gets at the Emirates. So.
Listen, that is a whole other debate about modern stadia. And I know that football's a business now. And yes, I'm a dinosaur. And yes, I'm stuck in the ages of when I first started watching football. And I always felt, to be fair, that Arsenal, when I was younger, I always felt Arsenal had an unfair advantage because of Highbury. When people talk about that goal from Thierry Henry in the North London derby, you know, when he sort of took it round nobody and scored with his left foot and everybody waxed lyrical about this amazing solo goal. You had to run far less than other people would normally have to run for a solo goal because the pitch was that much smaller and you didn't take anyone on. So that goal is a myth. But I was surprised. I mean, listen, I know they had to leave Highbury for business reasons or whatever, but we're seeing it with West Ham when they moved to the London Stadium. We're seeing it with Spurs to an extent now. It's probably going to take a while unless Jose Mourinho happens to turn them around, but Arsenal have never been the same size since they left Highbury.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been a few times. I've been to the London Stadium as well, and it's just so hard to recreate atmosphere, I think, especially because I think we forget that there are, like, there's traditions in football stadia, which when you go and sit in the same place in the ground every week in, week out, you know the chants that everyone sings, you know everyone around you, you feel comfortable and stuff. And I think part of the problem they had, particularly with the London Stadium actually, was that they just moved everyone around, and suddenly people who'd been going for 10, 15, 20 years with the same people around them were in a new in a new situation. And I actually went to an academic conference where they talked about the issue of stadium atmosphere. How long do you reckon it takes to actually develop a club atmosphere in a stadium? And the guy who was speaking reckoned 3 seasons is what it takes you to actually get a stadium to a point at which the atmosphere is good.
Wow. That's an incredible... Sorry, you went to a conference specifically about atmosphere.
It wasn't about atmosphere. I went to a conference which was about football academic... Basically, in academia, there's lots of people who work on football.
Right, okay.
But you can't go to a... you can't study football in academia. So there's a conference where everyone who's working indirectly on football came together and they spoke about their topics. So this guy was working in France doing a lot of work on rugby stadia actually, and he gave this paper, and I thought it was really interesting. So yeah, 3 seasons he reckoned is what it takes as one of the biggest factors in when you move from one stadium to another, actually developing that atmosphere again.
You say you can't study football. I swear there was a news story a couple of years ago where you could David Beckham study. Wasn't that an offer that was on?
I think
you could do a
master's or something on David Beckham. Okay, yeah, but you can't go to we won't be like a department of football at most universities that I've seen anyway. So there you go.
Well, with regards to the FA Cup itself...
Sorry, I've taken us off on a bit of a tangent.
Mate,
there.
That's what this fan show is all about. With regards to the FA Cup itself, however, though, how are you guys feeling about the FA Cup and potential fixture congestions and distraction from the priority that is getting out of the Championship into the Premier League?
No, don't need to bother with the FA Cup, I'd say. I'd say don't disgrace ourselves at Arsenal. Put up a fight and then sort of gently ease out and focus on the league.
I mean, my head says that, but I was quite excited when Arsenal were called out, and I was like, come on, Leeds, and then they came out because there was no one really left in the drawer at that point of any interest, so I was quite pleased that we got Arsenal. I'm going to the game, and I'm really looking forward to it because it's just nice to remember what it was like to be a fan back in the day when we were playing Arsenal all the time. So, yeah, I don't have any... I'm under no illusions that this is going to be a strong Leeds side versus a strong Arsenal side, and I don't really think it should be, but I'm looking forward to the fixture. It should be a good day out.
Do you know what? I don't know whether it won't be a strong Arsenal side. I think this is a prime example for whoever is in charge at the time of Arsenal to actually put a decent side out, bring a bit of the love back to the fans, and the FA Cup may now be a priority for Arsenal because of the way that they are at the moment.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and I think it would be really good to see the Leeds youngsters, if they are played. I suspect they will be played. It would be great to see them have their sort of moment in the limelight, and we've got some really, really good youth players in the Leeds setup, and it'd be nice to see them given a bit of a boost for that. So players like Jamie Shackleton, who's probably more of a senior player now, but he's been struggling with injury. It'd be nice if he could be back by then. Players like Robbie Gotts, who's been in and around, and people have been waxing lyrical about him, and rightly so. Players like Mateusz Bogots, the Polish teenager who we've got, who did a lot in pre-season but hasn't come through. And then you've got players like Alfie McCalman, again, someone who people thought might be playing in place of Calvin Phillips this weekend, but it's thought that Ben White will be playing instead. So there's plenty of really good youth players on the cusp, and that could be a really nice opportunity for them to come out.
Mm. I'm just thinking we'd be able to... I think he'll probably play a fairly strong... Certainly the backbone of the side will be a lot of senior players. And I guess it might be quite an interesting look on how Leeds could look in the Premier League next year. It's a bit of a free hit, but I think it'll be nice to see how, especially as a lot of the new players, a lot of the players at Leeds have just signed sort of long-term contracts for the next sort of 3-4 years. They essentially will be part of Leeds' Premier League plans. Mm. So it'll just be interesting to see how they go head-to-head in the Premier League. You watch the Premier League, I was watched a couple of the games this week just because they're on Amazon Prime. And just the quality and sharpness of the passing of teams like Man City and Liverpool is just different league to the Championship. So it'd be really interesting just to see how Leeds cope.
Mm. Go on.
Yeah, you mentioned the congestion. That game comes immediately after our game with West Brom, who are obviously our closest challengers at the moment. And then it's followed by three of our bogey teams, Sheffield Wednesday, QPR, and then Millwall. So it's also coming at the end of a very tough run as well, with some big teams that will really define, I think, where we are by the new year. And I think at the new year we'll have a much better sense of what the final table is going to look like. So I do have in the back of my mind this sort of thinking that, you know, we really need to make sure of our position by then. And I suspect the makeup of the teams for that game will be very much dependent on how that run up to we say 8 games was it to the Arsenal game, and then we'll see how we are at that point.
Well, that game is in January. We're going to speak more about the January transfer window as the weeks go on. But there is one name that I want to throw at you fellas, and I've been meaning to do this for the past couple of weeks, but I either don't get around to it or I completely forget. And that name is Dwight Gayle. Because for me, and you might completely disagree, that's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer for me in terms of a loan deal. Arguably, more so than Eddie Nketiah at the start of the season. I think Dwight Gayle is at Newcastle this season, as we know, isn't playing, isn't scoring. But when you look at his record in the Championship and his most recent seasons, you know, last season at West Brom, 24 goals in 40 games. In the 2016-17 season with Newcastle, 23 goals in 32 games. He was injured for a period in that season as well and stopped me winning a lot of money as I had him as a top scorer in the Championship that season. So thank you, Dwight. But I think that is a great option up front.
I think my issue with this transfer is that if we get rid of Eddie Nketiah, I mean, we've struggled with Eddie Nketiah keeping him happy behind Patrick Bamford, and the same thing would happen for Dwight Gayle as well. Dwight Gayle, I suspect, would feel more aggrieved to be not playing than Eddie Nketiah. So I don't know whether or not it solves any problems, whether or not you're just in exactly the same situation all over again, but just with a different player.
Mm. Yeah, I guess he'd want to come straight into the team. I mean, there's rumour of his wages being, 60k a week or something. And he's the kind of player who'd want to walk straight into that team. You're quite right. I'm not sure if he is actually available for a loan. I think there's rumours of him being a sell deal for 15 million. Is that right?
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I'm not particularly convinced that we will end up with him.
No, so. His name gets thrown around a lot, and you see fans on Twitter crying out for Dwight Gayle, but I don't see it.
Yeah, it'd be a no for me as well. I'm not entirely sure that we would really get the best out of him as well in our system, particularly because we spend a lot of our time trying to break down defences, and I see him as being more of a player who gets in behind and makes the most of being quicker than defenders. So,
well, that is an answer to my question. Very well answered, gents. So thank you for that. I'm not going to bring him up again. So there we go. That was an itch I needed to scratch. So we're done. In terms of left-back, John, I know you wanted to speak about left-back because this has been very much a topic of discussion, and that Leeds don't seem to have a left-back of sorts.
Well, we do, but we don't like to play them in their position. So really interesting because this month we actually played the 3-3-1-3 formation 4 times out of 5. which is a formation that we do sort of go into when we're playing normally, but only when we're in possession usually. So it was weird. It's been weird watching them play this really interesting way. It's a formation that Bielsa made quite famous during his time, particularly at Chile, when he was the national manager there. And what's been really interesting about that is that the way that we set up is that we tend to play with Jack Harrison as an out-and-out winger, so he gets really far up the field. We overload on the right side around Pablo Hernandez, who's our playmaker, and then we try and find Jack Harrison, try and get him isolated against opposition fullbacks or even in space behind them. Now that means that we leave a lot of space behind him on the left-hand side. So the way that you play your wing back is or your fullback at that point usually is to give Jack Harrison a bit of support, but then that leaves acres of space in behind. So before last month, we had been using Calvin Phillips dropping in, so he would drop in into basically a left back position when we were in possession and the ball had been progressed up the field, and he would just give a little bit more support just in case the ball was lost by Harrison or the corresponding left back as well. What's been happening this month, and really interesting, is that we've been playing three at the back, and then we've been playing wing backs of Mateus Klik on one side and Stuart Dallas on the right, just in front of Luke Ayling. But what happens in possession is that Luke Ayling bombs on, becomes basically a wing back, and Stuart Dallas drops in from the right back or the right wing back area into the left back area to give a little bit of help out for that scenario. So Stuart Dallas has been essentially playing as a left back at times during our recent games, despite the fact that he's been technically a right wing back, which sounds very complicated. But I think that what that means is that when we just start playing a back four again, I think Bielsa will just be happy to play him as a left back. He's been playing so well. That said, there's been rumours that Liam Cooper's had an injury potentially. I don't know how true this rumour is, but with Ben White pushing forward into a midfield area, you've now only got Berardi and Ayling left really a centre-back option. So it might mean then that Dallas does go to the right tomorrow, and then we bring in someone like Alioski probably for the other left-back area. So that was a really long answer to your question, but I do think it's fascinating being a team that's coached by Bielsa who's happy to do that kind of thing. Like, have you ever seen a team who has a right wing back who fills in as a left back when you're in position in attacking phases? Because I haven't.
No. I mean, I was going to say, could you just say all that again, please, for me, just so I can understand?
I should have brought a tactics board in, shouldn't I?
What a graph, mate. But it's funny because it's not so much square pegs in round holes in the same way, is it? It's something that he's actually tactically figured out. It's not a case of, I've got a player, I just need to fill him somewhere, so I'm going to plonk him there.
It's like making square holes to fit square pegs in or something like that.
Yeah.
But he is next level, and that's what I... What's been great about this season, and last season we were very, very tactically rigid, I think. We did the same thing all the time. We basically played 4-1-4-1 out of possession, and in possession formed a sort of 3-3-1-3. When we played against teams with two strikers, we would just, rather than playing 4-1-4-1 out of possession, we just played 3-3-1-3 out of possession as well as in possession. Now we're doing loads more interesting stuff. You're seeing that Bielsa has a lot more faith in what it is that his players are doing, and he's happy to just let them do things like that. And that's why he loves Dallas. Dallas is great because you can say to him, this is the role that you're playing, and you need to be able to read the game and know when you need to transition from that right wing back area into the left back area. It's great seeing that he's got the faith for his players to do that. This is why when we talk about January, it's so hard to see him wanting to bring someone in, because he's going to have to start from scratch with these players when he's got a whole squad of players who he feels as though he can trust.
Well, whether it's 4-1-4-1 or 3-3-1-3, 2-4-3-4-6-7-8-9-10, I don't know, but it is 0208-70-20-558.
That's a great segue. That's brilliant.
WhatsApp us on that number if you like, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. It's the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. We're going to be talking Huddersfield next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh. This is the Leeds United Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Discussing everything that has gone on in the world of Leeds United and looking ahead, of course, to the game tomorrow afternoon, 12:30 kickoff at Huddersfield. Interesting one, this, and on the line to discuss it now, we have Ian Dunn, ex-Huddersfield cult hero, I'm going to call him, slash legend, slash player that Huddersfield fans love to sing about. We won't sing the chant. Ian Dunn, welcome to the show.
Many thanks. Thanks for the introduction. My ego has just inflated massively.
Well, do you know what? I was going to sing the chant, but as another man who is slightly follically challenged, and the gent opposite me as well will tell you the same, we can relate. We can relate, Ian, so it's all good.
Right. That's fair enough. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, looking ahead to the game tomorrow. This is a big one. And actually, Ian, I think what's interesting we'll start with is the form that Huddersfield have had this season as a whole, really. When you think about the start of the campaign, 9 games without a win. The Cowleys came in 7 games without defeat. Since then, it's 4 games back without a win again. Quite erratic at the moment from the Terriers.
It is, yeah. I know there's some concern around town with, you know, the sort of the manager boost that came in with the Cowleys, and they are the right people for the job, there's no doubt about it, but some of the old frailties have just reappeared in the last 3, 4, 5 games, and they're the frailties that ultimately got Jan Siebert at the sack and why they got relegated last season from the Premier League.
What do you think those frailties are? Let's expand on that.
I'm worried that they maybe thought it was going to be a case of bouncing straight back, even though they'll tell you it wasn't. I think some of the players had got, you know, I mean, if you play in the Premier League, you get everything, all the trimmings, and some can believe that they're Premier League standard players. And when you come down into the Championship, I don't think they realised, and they should do, really, because the Championship is one heck of a division and the standard is massive. And I just think some of the players actually got a shock, and they've not really been able to turn in any consistent performances, and it needed the introduction of the new management team just to get a bit of a bounce. But the fear is that maybe some of the players are reverting a bit to that early season form, and the Cowleys really have got to address those issues and soon, really, because with Christmas fast approaching and Town hovering just above the sort of relegation places, it does start to get a little bit concerning.
Yeah, but to be fair to the Cowleys, I feel as though I'm doing the Huddersfield fan show. to be fair to the Cowleys, they've had a lot of injury problems. For example, when they obviously got shooed last week by Bristol City, but Fraser Campbell got injured in pretty much the first play of the game. They brought him off and they shuffled everyone round. And it wasn't just a small shuffle. They had Lewis O'Brien playing at left back, and they moved him into an attacking central midfield role. And Bakuna's been playing here, there, and everywhere at the moment. They're missing Jaden Brown at left back as well. So There's just players missing all over the field at the moment. So how much do you think that's got to do with what's going on?
Oh, massively, yeah, definitely. I mean, like I say, that coincides with the injuries that have come. I know there's 3 or 4 concerns for tomorrow, including I think Fraser Campbell. I'm not sure if he's going to be fit to play or not. But you know, when he is playing, he makes such a difference to the whole ethic of the squad. But when I say address those issues, ultimately, Huddersfield don't have the time to have injuries, if that makes sense. So with injuries comes loss of form. January's fast approaching. It might be a case that they need to just strengthen the team with players that are up for a bit of a battle, because from January, well, from now onwards, really, it's going to be a battle for Huddersfield. They've got to find some battling qualities from somewhere to try and put another consistent run of decent form together. Mm.
We like to talk about tactics on our channel. I've been looking through the game since the Cowleys came in. They play 4-2-3-1 pretty much. Sometimes it looks a bit more like a 4-4-2. What do you think about those tactics? They're obviously a really high-pressing team as well, an aggressive pressing team. Do you think that's the right sort of tactics for Huddersfield right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually watched the Lincoln teams that they manage, and they play very similar, clearly. This is how they like to play. They like the teams to press high. And I just think, hopefully, like you say, they've been there a wee while now. The work rate certainly improved during the period when they were doing that little bit better. The injuries have come at a bad time, but long term, they've got the formation right. They know what they want to achieve, tactics wise. It's just getting the personnel on the pitch to do that.
Ian, Marcelo Bielsa generally has a good record in Yorkshire derbies. However, for games between Leeds and Huddersfield, Huddersfield have won the past three. It is a fact that Leeds haven't lost four in a row since 1928 to 1931. Can you see this happening tomorrow?
I just think tomorrow that anything can happen, because we do know that the Cowleys are a good management team. Obviously, you're going to have to lick the wounds from the last couple of weeks, but there's nothing bigger than the Yorkshire Derby, certainly for Huddersfield. Leeds might feel the same. I'm pretty sure they do. It's a massive game, and some of those players will be looking forward to it with a chance of sort of reigniting the season and getting over the recent bad results. It's a massive opportunity for those players and the team to really boost the club. I mean, I know if they take a lead early on tomorrow, I mean, I think the stand will be buzzing anyway. But if Huddersfield were to take the lead, which is kind of what they need at the moment for a confidence boost, you know, the town fans will be absolutely rocking. On the flip side, don't want to be too much of a pessimist, if Leeds start off like a house on fire, then it could be a long afternoon.
Did you ever play in a Yorkshire derby, Ian?
Do you know, I don't think... Well, we played against Bradford at the time. In fact, I made my debut against Bradford in the FA Cup, and that was a huge occasion, not just for me, but I could sense it. The fans, the club, the week before the game, everyone's looking forward to that. At that time, that was the big Yorkshire derby for Huddersfield and Bradford. And it is, there's something different about those sorts of games when they come around. You can either raise 10% or you can shrivel up and lose 10%. So hopefully the players are up for it tomorrow and they get that early boost. And hopefully, from a Huddersfield point of view, obviously, they come away with the points.
And just to finish on that, Ian, do you think that still exists within the current crop of players, that local feeling, that local rivalry? Like you said, the crowd obviously feel it. When that first goal goes in, do you think the players will react to the fact that it is a Yorkshire derby? We saw the Merseyside derby this week. We've got the Manchester derby, of course, at the weekend. And sometimes fans say, you know what, it doesn't mean as much because the local feel, the players that have come through the ranks aren't as common nowadays. But do you think that still exists, especially in the Championship?
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure that the press and the fans and the people in the streets, they'll make sure those players know that it's a huge game to them. And that should be all the footballers need. They're going into a massive game. They know how much it means to the fans. And if they don't, there's something wrong. No, I don't think that'll be a problem. And as soon as that first whistle is blown, I think both teams will be at it. It'll be. I think it's going to be a heck of a game. I really do.
I don't know if you've heard about this march, this walk that's been done by the supporters groups from both clubs, walking from Elland Road to the Huddersfield ground. So that's happening tomorrow morning. So they're setting up at 6:30, and they're doing that in aid of food banks for around the area. So I just wondered whether or not you, just to follow on from that sort of feeling of the derby. Obviously, there's a derby feel to this game. Do you think that derby feel is still there? It's good to see that fans can put their differences behind them and do something good for charity like this. But what do you think of the status of this game for Huddersfield fans?
I think that's a fantastic thing that fans can come together and do that. And that does exist in football. You see it quite a lot more now. It's more prevalent in big games, big players. They know that they've got responsibilities and the fans are taking it on as well. I think it can only be a positive for tomorrow. And, you know, that's what football's all about. you know, for 90 minutes, you hate each other. But before and after, you get on with the game, and things like this are just great news. It's good to hear.
Ian, it has been great having you on. You might say it's been golden, just like a golden goal.
Excellent. Yeah, I'll maybe look at that tonight.
Lovely stuff. Thanks, buddy.
That's a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Ian Dunn, Ian Dunn. Ian Dunn, he's got nowhere, but we don't care. Ian Dunn. I had to get it out of my system. I really wanted to do it when he was on the line, but I couldn't. Of course, that was Ian Dunn, ex-Huddersfield legend Ian Dunn. And the little pun at the end, the golden pun, was, of course, the fact that he was the first ever British player to score a golden goal, fellas.
Who did he score
in British football? He scored it for Huddersfield. There we go, against Lincoln City in what was then an auto windscreen shield clash. Of course, that is now the leasing.com trophy.
Is that what used to be the Johnston Paint trophy?
Yes, and Checkatrade and Autoglass and whatever you want to call it. So, yes, I mean, fellas, his thoughts on that. Good talking about the Yorkshire Derby, by the way. The fire, that's what we want. We want the passion. Do you think, I mean, you asked him, you said, do you think it still exists? Do you think it does?
I don't know. I think we as Leeds fans, we like to pretend that everyone cares about playing us and we don't care about playing anyone. We're like, oh yeah, well, the only derbies that we really consider are the, you know, we consider our rivals to be Manchester United and Chelsea and things like that, which let's face it, is probably not particularly accurate, but I think it's a game that fans actually do get up for. I know that a lot of my closest Leeds fan friends are quite keen on the derby, particularly that they're looking forward to tomorrow in particular. So I think it would be wrong of us to pretend that it isn't that important. But I know that Phil Hay this week on his show was suggesting that Huddersfield fans take it more seriously than Leeds fans. But I don't know whether or not that's particularly fair.
Marcus?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, I think. I actually listened to Danny Cowley's interview the other day post game. I haven't heard much of him since he was appointed, and he seems to be kind of siding with the fans and trying to take the view that a lot of the players that have come down from the Premier League are kind of coasting a bit. He made an interesting point that the game in Bristol, he was saying the players don't know how lucky that they are. They got flown down to Bristol for the game. They got beaten 5-2. Obviously, travelling fans have spent countless pounds, driven countless miles down the motorway to get to that game. And the impression that he was giving is that they weren't getting their money's worth. They weren't getting the desire from the players. Just quite interesting, that perspective of footballers flying down to a game, but then fans going on driving down. It's interesting.
Well, Marcelo Bielsa famously had his players litter picking at the beginning of the season for the allotted amount of time that it takes you to buy a ticket, so that they had a sense of what the fan is going through in order to watch the team. So I think that's probably a good approach to have, really, to make players aware of what it is. Yes, obviously what they do is a job, and they will be disappointed with wins and losses and stuff, but it's good to give that sense of what it is that the fans are going through as well.
Mm. He seemed quite in awe as well of Marcelo Bielsa, didn't he? Very complimentary of Bielsa. I read some of his comments from that press conference. There are very few people you can call pioneers in football, but he is definitely one, said Danny Cowley of Bielsa. He also said, it seems like the players are almost on remote control. And then I was reading some of what Bielsa said, and actually it references what you were discussing earlier about the square pegs and the round holes and stuff. And a great quote from Bielsa ahead of this game: some players move in the pitch from the back to forward and other players from forward to back. It's not something I created. Football is played like that now. Brilliant. Classic Bielsa, isn't
he? He's referred to them before. He said, if I played with a team of robots, I would always win. Yeah. That's what he's famously said. So.
Yeah, so Huddersfield, of course, up at the weekend. We're going to be talking more about that and answering your listeners' questions next on the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
The Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport with me, Matt Beadle, John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we, and Marcus Stanway. We've got about 8 minutes of the show left. We're reaching our finale, which means it's time, of course, for your listeners' questions. Gents, I'm going to jump straight into them. First one is from Josh Hobbs. He read, in a Phil Hay Q&A. Of course, Phil Hay, Leeds United writer for The Athletic, that Leeds United are keeping tabs on Lee Bowyer as a future manager option. What, gents, do you think of that?
I don't know what I think of that. I've seen Charlton a few times actually this season. I've been to the Valley a few times, and it's hard to really read how good they are in this division. Partly because, you know, we all know the sort of rumblings that they've had over the last few seasons. So that's a team that have really had to work against their owner a lot of the time. So it was very impressive that he even got them up last season and has got them off to a pretty good start this season. So I think that sets him in good stead. But it's hard to know what's going to happen after Bielsa leaves. So presumably, if they're keeping tabs on him, he would be a player they would consider to replace Bielsa. And it's just so hard to know what a manager following Bielsa has to do, because there's no way that you can play the same way that Bielsa plays. You can't expect the sort of intensity that Bielsa commands, because he is so well respected in the game. So it's almost like you have to just reinvent the team as soon as Bielsa goes. So it would be interesting to see what Bowyer did. And I'm not entirely sure that, like, having a team that performs well with not the best players in the championship is the best preparation for Leeds, presuming that by the time that Bielsa goes, they'll be in a fairly healthy position, you think. So I don't know how I feel. I think I've been impressed by Bowyer, and I've been impressed at his tactical nous. I do think he's a bit reactive in this league. I feel as though a lot of the time he sets his game plan up to try and stymie the opposition rather than actually doing anything really creative himself in an attacking sense. But I don't know. I kind of feel if you have Bielsa, you should be thinking of maybe more proven managers once he's gone. But maybe,
well,
I'm wrong.
Do you know what? It's a really good point you raised there, because it is going to be a radical transition for whoever takes over that job. Like you said, the way that Bielsa plays is, you know, no one else can play like that, really. Is it beyond the realms of possibility that, and it probably is, that someone would come in and potentially work under Bielsa for a season prior to taking the job?
I don't think so. I think Bielsa will stay next season if Leeds are promoted. But he's never managed at a club, I don't think, longer than two seasons. Just thinking through his biography in my head. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's two seasons is the maximum time that he's spent at a club. So we don't really know what Leeds getting into the Premier League would actually look like for Bielsa's career trajectory. Would it be, if they stayed up, would he be happy to stay another season? Would we get 4 years of Bielsa? Or if we went down again, presumably that's it. So I think a lot of it depends on what's going to happen in the long term. But I can't see him being there long enough that happens. Although I would say that when he was managing in Mexico, he started off at a club, I think it was Atlas. He started off as a sporting director and then became the manager. So he has done a sort of sporting director stint before. So maybe that would be the movement. Maybe they could persuade him to stay on as a sporting director and then get someone to manage under him. But I suspect that he probably wouldn't like that. I think he quite likes being in control of everything. So, yeah, an interesting question. And there's going to come a point at which these questions are raised, and I don't think many of us are ready for what that might actually look like. Are we going to see like a mini Ferguson and mini Wenger happening at Leeds?
Interesting. And you're right, bang on, by the way, about the managerial situation with Bielsa as well. In terms of club football, yeah, has never been anywhere more than 2 years. So you're bang on with that one. We're going to move on to missing players. This is from DB Kahuna. Which one player would we statistically miss the most through absence due to injury, etc.?
I'm going to say Ben White on this one. I think he's been the Iceman Kometh this season. He just looks so assured at the back. He's got fantastic range of passing, diagonal balls. And if he were to become injured, you've then got Berardi coming in, Berardi and Cooper, who, yeah, Berardi has played some good football for Leeds, but he's also kind of, yeah, the red mist can often descend with Berardi, and he's kind of, yeah, a bit, you don't know. You never know what's going to happen with Berardi, and I feel like he's never quite got that out of his role at Leeds. So Ben White for me. Don't want him to get injured.
It says due to injury, etc. What about suspension? Because Ooh. I've got a feeling that Kike Casilla, if we do miss him for six games, is going to be a big miss. You're a goalkeeping gentleman yourself, so I've got some facts for you.
Ooh.
How many shots do you think that Kike Casilla has faced this season?
Crikey. Okay, well, if I refer to this graph that you gave me earlier on. I would say shots faced.
Yeah.
Well, I would say it's been minimal. I would say it's potentially under 20.
No, it's more than that, actually. It's 51 shots.
Wow.
Okay, so he's faced 51 shots, and we have a metric which is called post-shot XG, which you basically take the shots, look at where they're going, see who's in front of you, where the keeper's positioned, and you work out how many goals the keeper stops more than should have gone in, or lets in more than should have gone in. How many... Kike Casilla has stopped more goals from going in than he should have. How many goals do you reckon he should have let in than he has, do you think? That's a horrible way of putting
sure.
it. So you understand it.
It's again, a bit like how much wood could Woodchuck chuck if Woodchuck
He stopped a certain amount of goals in his season so far.
It's more what we're looking at now in terms of the expected goals against, isn't it? And
exactly,
what goalkeepers are saving.
51 shots, and in those 51 shots, he's stopped a certain amount of goals from going in.
More than he should have done. I would say, I'll pluck it out of the air, 25.
It's much less than that. It's 4, right. Which is, I think, maybe the highest in the league. So I think he's got the fewest shots faced, but he's stopped the highest prevented the highest number of goals more than going in than should have done. So we've got probably the best goalkeeper in the league. Add to that the fact that he's brilliant on the ball. Add to that the fact that he's ironed out a lot of the scary aspects of his game, and you're starting to worry a little bit more about what happens when he goes.
When he potentially is banned, of course, in January. Fellas, we have come to the end of our hour. Of course, it is Huddersfield at the weekend, and let's hope that Carlin Grant gets a goal, because no other player in all top four tiers of English football has been on the losing side more than Carlin Grant when he has scored a goal since he signed for Huddersfield.
What about if he doesn't score?
So there you
goal?
Go. Well, we don't know the stats behind that one, John. However, this has been the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. Just a quick score prediction.
2-0.
2-0 to Leeds. Marcus?
2-1. I think Huddersfield will score.
Lovely stuff.
Colin Grant.
Gents, thank you very much for joining me. We'll be back at 8 p.m. next Friday.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.